everyone. Welcome back to Back in the Office with myself, Nick Carman, and co-host and probably primary host, Chris Carman. And
that's
today we have
that's because I own the company, right? So I can be the primary.
It's golden rule.
I'm contractually obligated to mention that. but today we've got a very exciting guest, Troy Medley, who is the CEO of Lambda Chi Alpha International Fraternity, whose headquarters are in Carmel, Indiana. I personally was in a fraternity at Indiana University, and had a great time. But also, as most of you probably think of a fraternity as kind of the stereotypical Animal House, we're excited about is Troy kind of getting into the business side of things. It's much more than the bricks and mortar that you think of on the college campuses, but just there's so much more to it. Running these huge organizations, so we're gonna dive into that, and as well as Troy's background as a California transplant too.
Yeah, I should define how I met Troy and how we connected. I think one of your staff called us, probably under your direction. We need to find a real estate broker that does tenant representation because we need to find a new office. And voila, there we were. So that's the original connection. So we helped Lambda Chi find a new office space in Carmel. And
very cool office space, I might add.
That's right. It is. As Nick mentioned, there's always that stereotype of a fraternity or what a fraternity should look like. And here you are. You're in one of the newest and one of the most high-tech office buildings in the city of Carmel, Indiana, which is, of course, often known as one of the best small cities in the U.S. to live and do business and all that good stuff. And you got a big sign on the building, which is kind of cool.
Biggest sign in Carmel.
it probably is.
It is, I think. I think we went to the max.
Yeah.
And had to even ask the city if we could go a little bit bigger.
Really? Yeah, you're located right on a roundabout at one of the major intersections in the city of Carmel, and it's a blade sign. And although I knew it was coming, I remember the day I was driving through that roundabout, I almost like, whoa, it felt like you were going
to hit it. It stops traffic.
There's do people ever call you and say,
all the
hey,
time.
Is there going to be a bear bust on Friday over
no,
here?
No. No, most of the folks that actually, because I want to say 75% of fraternal and sorority organizations in the United States are headquartered in Indianapolis and Carmel. Most of the folks in this area have a much more educated understanding of what our organizations do versus folks who just watch Animal House or Van Wilder. So, Now I do get a lot of calls with people saying we're showing off, and I'm like, hell yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Look how big my sign is.
Well, I think that when you moved to that office, you were looking for some more identity or visibility, perhaps, in the community?
Mostly we were looking, the Gen Z is a very different generation than any generation that's come before. The way I like to work as a Gen Xer, the way the boomers like to work, even the way older millennials like to work is very different than Gen Z, that lots of open space, mm-hmm. Collegial collaboration spaces. So we needed something that would be attractive to that generation. As you remember, where we were before was it was either a law firm or an insurance.
It was a law firm, yeah. Right.
And it was set up that way, and it just didn't foster collaboration. And most of our employees, this could be their first job. They're moving here mm-hmm. from all over the country, and to put them in an L-shaped office building where they don't see anybody when they already miss home just wasn't
right.
conducive to long-term success. So we needed to have our infrastructure map the needs of our employee base. And
yeah.
And it's 3 minutes from my house. So
importantly.
And in California, for 20 years, I drove an hour to work and an hour and a half home. And now I drive 3 minutes to work and 3 minutes home.
Yet there may not be much difference in the distance that you're actually driving, right?
Yeah, I think I think it took me an hour to go 25 miles.
Wow. We worked with a client that moved from San Diego to Carmel. And I remember out there visiting with them and leaving their corporate campus, if you will, to drive to the hotel, which was maybe a quarter of a mile, but I left at about 5 o'clock. Yet I swear it probably took me an hour to go a very short distance. It's crazy out there sometimes.
Well, my corporate office was in a huge office park with Oracle and Sun and Wells Fargo. Yeah. And if I left at 4:50 versus 5 o'clock, it would take an extra half hour to get home because you'd have all of those. I think there were five major buildings, right. Everybody trying to get out of the office development at the same time. Right. So if you're not out at 4:50, you might as well stay till 7.
Yeah. You said something interesting about your employee base and the idea of going to, I don't know what to call it, the old style of office building. And I often hear it called like your grandfather's or your father's office. The person coming, the young person.
I would
person,
call it my office building, right? That's how I like to work, but that's not how.
Yeah, the young person coming out of school, right? They're thinking, I don't want to go to my dad's office. I want something cool. I want some connection with the other people there. I want to hang out with them, what have you. So I do hear that often.
You know, we've got all the new Zoom-capable speakers, and it's weird. We got cameras that follow you around. That's how I found out I have a bald spot because you can see yourself on screen. I'm like, who's that guy? Oh, it's me.
I'm not going to walk around there because then I'll find out I have a bald spot today.
How bald you are.
It was not one of my best days. Yeah.
Well, tell us, how did you make this transition? So you I know from knowing you, I know that you were basically an entrepreneur. You were in another type of business altogether when you were in California. So how did that whole transition occur? What were you doing, and how'd you end up in California, I guess, originally?
Well, I'll start at the beginning.
Okay, please do.
Kind of like, why do I do what I do now? Because people are always surprised when I tell them what I'm doing now. But I grew up in a pretty rocky home situation. I didn't have the most stable family environment. I got in some trouble when I was a senior in high school, lost a baseball scholarship, you know, just didn't have any direction. I went to junior college for a year, and then finally, I decided I had to get out of the town I lived in, and I drove to the university that was as far away as I could find that I thought my car could still you know, not explode before I got there. And so I went to Missouri State, which is about 3.5 hours from Kansas City, where I grew up, and I joined a fraternity, and I had all of a sudden I had 100 people that were willing to bet on me, invest in me, kind of force me to grow up in so many different ways. I went to work for an entrepreneur that was one of our alumnus that was building a bunch of restaurants. I kind of learned the entrepreneurial process from watching him and decided that I wanted to become an entrepreneur. So I started a painting business in college. I was painting about $100,000 a year of homes using fraternity brothers as labor, which you learn a lot about management when you're trying to manage your friends. Right? Right. I think I started with 17. I ended with 8.
Friends or employees?
A couple of those guys still don't talk to me because, you know, I had to let them go because they weren't doing what they were supposed to. I went to work for a franchising organization after college. I spent 5 years all over the country learning the ins and outs of franchise management, mostly the human side, because I was a history major undergrad, so I didn't have the technical side of business. So I went to Pepperdine University for my MBA, and I thought I was going to stay in California for 2 years, and I ended up staying for 20.
Yeah.
I met a
professor. You're not alone. I think a lot of people have done that.
Yeah, well, I met a professor who became my executive coach, you know, who in my entrepreneurship class, which was the last class that I took. I wish it was the first class, because then I would have been able to reframe. Because entrepreneurship and running a corporate organization are very different.
Or traditional business and entrepreneurship, really different.
Yeah. Who cares about the income statement? It's all about the cash flow statement.
Right.
But we ended up starting a sports performance company, ended up with 72 franchises, which we sold. I used to come to Indianapolis for the combine every year. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I ever saw was RCA Dome, the Conrad Hotel, and the Capitol Grill, because in Indianapolis, everything is so cold, you just use those walkways.
That's right. You don't want to stray too far.
So
right,
when we first moved here, my wife's like, well, you know downtown. I'm like, yeah, I know three. Yeah. I know three buildings.
Yeah, there's three buildings downtown.
Because it was
downtown.
Always freezing. Yeah. but I sold that company. I was working with a lot of sports medicine physicians and orthopedists because we were training a lot of NFL players for the combine, and they were so beat up at the end of their collegiate season. Mm-hmm. And this is when Obamacare and everything, about 2008, 2009. And there was a need, at least there was the believed need, it turned out to be true, that there was an opportunity to create a concierge medical group in Southern California, which we started. And which then morphed into an executive health management company that also managed hospitals, hospital executive health programs. So we managed the NFL Brain and Body program for the Cleveland Clinic. We managed the executive health program for Hoag Hospital, and I sold that company to Hoag Hospital in 2018.
It sounds like a storybook. Yes, a story.
Well, I loved it. My
storybook. What occurred, and your timing was probably really good with the concierge medicine.
It was, but somebody's told me once, your first deal should not be a success, because if it is, you think everything else is easy.
That's right. You've got the Midas touch, right?
The problem with building medical practices, and especially luxury medical practices, is it puts massive pressure on the balance sheet. I mean, I think I told you one time we spent $150 a square foot in tenant improvements.
Right.
So you're looking at $3-4 million to get just on your infrastructure to open a medical practice. You know, doctors don't think entrepreneurially typically, so they don't want to take less money. So you're subsidizing the physician spend while they're getting their membership practice up. So after a while, you're either doing more and more successive cap raises or you're taking on debt. And it just got to the point where we had reached we just couldn't keep growing because we had gotten too big. We couldn't self-fund from our own internally generated free cash flow. And we sold to a hospital because they have huge balance sheets and they could continue to build out the infrastructure needed to to make the whole thing go. That's a long way of saying I put a lot of pressure on my wife because I'm like, yeah, guess what? We're going to go sign, personally guarantee this deal because I need to open up this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that.
Yeah, Troy, what does this personal guarantee mean? Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
it's okay.
What's the worst case?
It's going to be big.
I do remember one time being in a meeting, though, and they're like, well, you know, you're personally guaranteed on that. And I'm like, listen, dude, that personal guarantee is so big that just call it because I don't have the money, right? Then we both lose.
Yeah, right.
Or we can figure out how to work together, and we figured out how to work together, and we both ended up winning.
You sound like a real estate developer.
In some ways, I'm watching this show right now about Jerry Buss and the Lakers. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple times when I'm like, yeah, might as well. I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound. But, you know, I'd been living that way for 20 years. I raised my kids during a lot of chaos. About 10 years ago, I started working with some different charities in Orange County. So I ended up chairing Miracles for Kids. I started a charter school. And I found at the end that was much more rewarding than, not financially rewarding, but much more just emotionally and socially rewarding. So I took about a year off after we sold personal care. And I went, you know, like, just, do I want to jump into something? What do I want to do? I hadn't asked myself that in 20 years. And I decided I really wanted to spend the rest of my career in not-for-profit. And the day after I put in LinkedIn, I'm interested in not-for-profit jobs, I got a call from a recruiter that was looking for only the sixth CEO in Lambda Chi Alpha's 113-year history.
Wow.
And because it had such an impact on me, and because our organization was looking to completely redesign the fraternal experience, figure out a way to better help the 200,000 alumni we have, not just the 10,000 collegiate students, and my entrepreneurial background kind of fit the need of the organization. We moved from Southern California to Carmel, Indiana.
Yeah, now was your wife from Southern California or?
She's from Kansas City, but her parents still live in Southern California.
Okay.
Ironically, when I told her that I was gonna look for jobs around the country, these were her exact words. fine, just don't move me to someplace like Indiana.
Another stereotype, right?
Exactly.
Who wants to go there?
And then we got here, and the place is amazing. A lot of my friends are either moving to Austin or they're moving to everybody moves to Franklin, Tennessee, outside Nashville.
Which is kind of like a Carmel outside of Nashville, right?
Exactly. But I don't know if I want a lot of people moving here because I don't want the roads to get crowded, but we have better traffic. You've got Notre Dame, Indiana University. I learned you don't do that backwards. Yeah. Purdue University. You've got all this talent.
Right.
There are all kinds of things to do because of all of the sports. Mm-hmm. This is an amazing place to live.
Yeah, it's very unique.
And we didn't know, right? We didn't know.
And most don't.
And most don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially if I was either in medicine or if I was in some sort of service business, I would be trying to move to this environment because the workforce, you have a very hardworking workforce in this
mm-hmm.
part of the world.
Interesting. It's but still, there's the pressure that a lot of business sees today in getting that talent, acquiring that talent, even with the broad universities in central Indiana or over the entire state, still it's difficult to get a lot of to get employees. It's been a challenge. Do you find that to be a challenge when you're hiring, or is it the connection being a fraternity and being able to draw upon the customer base out at the schools make it easier for you?
Well, we have a built-in feeder, mm-hmm. but being not-for-profit, we try to pay at the high 75 percentile for the equivalent job within a not-for-profit environment, but we're still a not-for-profit environment. So I mm-hmm. can't compete with Goldman Sachs. I can't compete with KPMG, Apple, Google financially. But what we can do, because we have 200,000 amazing alumni that run some of the most well-known and effective companies in the United States. We've got judges, we've got, lawyers, we've got doctors. If somebody comes and works for us for 2 to 3 years, not only can we teach them a lot about just the science of management, we can put them in touch with multipliers, people that mm-hmm. you can meet that can take your career to the next level, because
it's a very loyal base too, right?
You and I have probably learned in life it's all about relationships.
Absolutely.
So we can provide you with access to relationships that are going to enrich your life and help you. That's kind of the recruiting pitch. And now we got a really cool building.
Yeah, right, right.
Oh, and we're walking distance to Sun King.
That's true. Yeah, and a lot of other good venues. Mm-hmm. On the Monon Trail.
It makes a huge difference trying to recruit to that old building mm-hmm. and trying to recruit. I don't know if it is the most prestigious little development in Carmel, but it's one of them, and it's very easy to get everywhere, and it's helped us just recruit a different.
Yeah, it's very visible. Yeah just very visible. Nick, I think you were going to talk or ask about the challenges of operating a fraternal organization. You've talked about some of those, but going forward, what are some of the challenges that you're looking at?
Yeah, so as far as Trey, we all, again, kind of alluding a little bit to the stereotype of fraternities and sororities. How do you mitigate risk? You guys have how many chapters? 185 with even many, many more members than that. How do you navigate the risk involved running such a large organization?
Well, first and foremost, I was hired to kind of reinvent the fraternity experience for Lambda Chi Alpha.
What does that mean, Troy?
Well, there is stereotype. The worst thing that ever happened to our industry is Animal House, mm-hmm. Van Wilder, mm-hmm. and Neighbors, because they continuously reinforce an idea of either what a fraternity is or what it should be. So you end up with kids coming to school thinking, oh, this is how I'm supposed to behave, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which 85 to 95% of the members within a chapter are there to get an amazing education. We're the largest donor for Movember, for Men's Health. We do a massive amount for the Red Cross, not just our fraternity, but fraternities and sororities. We are a massive service organizations, and that's why they're there. It's the, you know, what we used to call in my chapter back in the day, Team Stupid, the five or six guys that perpetuate a bad, just a bad reputation for everybody. So what's our primary goal? Well, let's figure out a reason not to attract Team Stupid. So, you know, we've always had character education, because the thought process is 18 to 22 is the gateway to adulthood. But, you know, the executive reasoning function for most men doesn't really develop till about 25. So our job is to plant as much character building content within their lives as possible, so that A, they develop sooner, but then they have this material as their, as you know, as I remember sitting on a, I forgot where, I think I was on a train. I was 28 and I was like, oh my gosh, my dad was right about everything, right? Because it had just clicked. My brain had just caught up.
So that's where he was coming from.
Exactly. Yeah. So we try to plant as much on the character side as possible, but we've really started trying to help with the competence side. Study that came out 2 years ago, 13% of hiring managers believe students do not have the soft skills or the technical skills necessary to be successful. And so we partnered with Kaplan Learning, and we've taken a lot of our content, made it available online through Kaplan's Performance Academy Learning Management System. We have a leadership track, we have a financial management track, we have a sales and marketing track, we have a philanthropic management track, and this is for the officers to be able to come in, and it's about 20 hours of additional content, where they're taking the fact that they're actually running these little small businesses,
right?
We're giving them the content so they can, they have skills. Like, for instance, are you guys familiar with the Eisenhower window? You know, is it urgent, important, not urgent, not important? It's an easy time management tool that students, once they realize that, oh my gosh, there's a way for me to determine whether or not I should be doing something or not doing something, kind of makes it so much easier for them to perform their task.
Right.
Or simple budgeting tools. Or, hey, what's a CRM? These most of our recruitment managers want to go into sales. So if we can teach them how to use a CRM when they're 19,
right,
they're that much more effective. So we're really trying to focus on the competence and the character. And by doing that, that allows us to recruit a member that's looking for more than the Animal House experience. They're looking, because there's going to be more work involved, right?
Right.
This is a co-curricular activity. So there's work. And that's cool, because I want somebody to self-select out. That's not for me. I mean, there's 37, I believe, 37 fraternities. Many of them are going to offer you that traditional experience. That's just not for us. So, you know, taking some of the things I learned in my business career, which is strategically differentiate and know exactly who your target customer is, and then give them the services they need to have the experience they want, we're finding to be true at Lambda Chi Alpha. I mean, most of our competitors, shrank 15-16% in the last 2 years. We grew by 4%, just because we're offering a different experience that is, it's very easy for the discerning student to say, I want that.
Do they recognize that when they're going through Rush, I guess? Is that when they're a prospect, basically?
Well, we're actually trying, Gen Z, is mom and dad are much more involved in life of Gen Z. I've got three Gen Zers, I get it. So we start marketing to parents by their junior year. They're very interested in the fact that, oh my gosh, you can help my son acquire these skills that's gonna help them get a better job. And in the network that we have where we can actually then get them the better job. And then when they get to campus, we go after, so only 6%, and this number could be off, right? Because everything the last 2 years, who knows if the numbers are right.
Well, yeah.
But about 6%, of men that go to 4-year college campuses now join a fraternity. That means 94% don't. So that's who we then use social media advertising. We specifically go after honor students, first generation students, so that who are there because they want a job. That's who we market to.
And I suppose since you're marketing to the parents when they're still in high school, they look at that as, well, this would be good because it gives the kids maybe a framework rather than just turning them loose on a college campus. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard the statistics of how many freshmen going away to college wash out because it's just it's out of control.
Yeah, without,
and there is no controls. Yeah. There's no lanes on the bowling alley, if you will.
Without the fact that I had to have certain grades to become an active member, mm-hmm. I probably would not have made it through that first, because I had to learn to study. I didn't have to study in high school.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's a different experience. So I wanted to be a part of this organization. Therefore, I found that I had the capacity to work that I didn't know I had. And we do that in mass. We've started doing quarterly parent roundtables where we send it out to all of our parents. Mm-hmm. I think we had 178 parents on our last, and they ask, I was really nervous when we started because who knows what you're going to get asked. But
right.
They are a primary driver of, many of them are paying for it. Mm-hmm. Ironically, though, at least last year, 60-some percent, I think it was like 63% of our members paid either some or all of their tuition. Hmm. So, but they're still a stakeholder, and mm-hmm. we want to inform stakeholders, and that's one way for us to manage risk. If mom and dad know exactly what this experience should be, and they're hearing that what their son is experiencing doesn't match that desired outcome, they're going to tell us. And then
right.
We're working incredibly hard to try to get, we have the greatest opportunity that we have is we have 200,000 alumni that we could get more involved in service projects. We're talking right now to YPO, at least I'm trying to talk to YPO. If anybody from YPO is out there, please call me back. Vistage, another couple coaching groups that we could create coaching groups in major metropolitan areas where we could bring CEOs together or young executives together that share a common value set, but now we can get them to start helping each other build their businesses or start charter schools or just know.
It's really a cool concept because now it's not just at the college campus, but you're expanding outside the campus to continue the education, if you will.
Well, and I don't know if this is anecdotal, but I hear that, Mason enrollment's declining and Kiwanis enrollment's declining and Rotary enrollment's declining and church enrollment's declining, which means in a world where people need more support, we're getting less. And since we already have this built-in affiliation, we might as well figure out how do we get these men to come together. I was on the Miracles for Kids board in Southern California, and I did not know that one of the other, there were 17 people on the board, wasn't huge, that one of my friends was also a Lambda Chi. And once we found that, he found out when the press release came out that I was taking this job, and we sat and we spent a night talking about all the stuff we had in common. So we'd missed out on enriching our friendship just because we didn't know that we had this common,
right?
This
right.
common bond. I also found my largest customer at Personal Care, the corporation that paid us the most was Lambda Chi. It's like, oh gosh, I wish I'd known that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a study, today's graduate will probably move to 5 different cities during their career.
Well, that's a shocking statistic.
Well, I've lived in 4 now.
Wow. Yeah.
And just a place to call home, a place, I mean, when you get here, okay, maybe you should go to church here. This is a great place to get your hair cut. I mean, just having a soft place to land, that's the least we can do. Yeah. So that's kind of what we're trying to do for our alumni base.
Well, to kind of start wrapping up, what's the future looking like? In 10 years, what's Lambda Chi going to look like? We've heard about some of the initiatives that you're taking, but is it going to be dramatically different, do you think? Or
Our core is going to be the same, but I hope we're providing a lot more value, a lot more services that enrich people's lives from 18 to 22. That's always going to be our major customer segment. But what can we do from 22 to 30? And then all of a sudden you go through that crazy period in your life from 30 to 50 where you're building a business and raising kids and your parents are getting, are having health issues. We have brothers with companies that we can bring value to bear at these stages.
And they're
people's
loyal.
Lives.
And as you said, they feel like that membership they had meant something to them. So they are probably happy to carry it forward.
Yeah. So and then they give more back to the undergrad because, 18 to 22 needs to know what success looks like.
Yeah.
So the more men that are living their lives the right way that we can put forward as examples, they might not get it right now, but they're going to get it a lot quicker than if their entire idea of manhood comes from what they see on television, movies, or entertainment.
That's right. So, well, you've been a Midwesterner. You've been a SoCal person. What's next, do you think? Will you ever leave Central Indiana?
Well, as you and I were talking earlier, as soon as you say never, it's going to happen. Yeah, that's right. I love the Midwest. I mean, I'd live in Kansas City tomorrow if my wife would let me. I mean, it's my hometown. We have Patrick Mahomes. You don't. I can say that to everybody now. But you know, at some point, I'm gonna get a summer place or a winter place where it's not this cold.
Right.
But I love Indiana, and I'd love to have a presence here for. And I plan on working for at least another 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then who knows?
Indiana.
Switzerland.
Or Indiana in somewhere warm, maybe not Southern California though. Still going to be crowded.
The cool thing about being in Indiana is you're also so close to everything on the East Coast.
Right.
Close to the Caribbean, close to, I think it's 7 hours to get to London.
Right. You're one Southwest flight away from a lot of places.
From a lot of places. So, you know, being on the West Coast, if you had to go back East, it's like, okay, that's a 5.5 hour flight.
Yep.
I'm going to get there. It's going to be a weird time. I'm not going to be able to sleep. And then when I go home, it's going to be the same. So I'm a Midwesterner. I'd like to stay in the Midwest forever. Okay. And I love corn.
Well,
who knew?
There's a lot of people that would love you to stay here. So, well, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
This was it was interesting. I've known you a bit from our working together, and we've got to get through the new office. I've heard such good things about it.
Oh, it's cool.
And in the planning, I was involved in it. So I've got to see the finished product.
Well, here's an invitation. So April 23rd, we're having a museum dedication because we've actually, if you remember, we've set it up to actually be a museum.
That's right, yeah.
And we have about 150 of our alumni coming from all across the country. So I'll make sure, since you helped us
I would love
put
to
it
be
together.
There. I would love to be there. Thank you. So, well, thank you. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
For joining us today.